Nehemiah chapter 2. We're going to dive straight in at verse 12. I set out during the night with a few others. I had not told anyone what my God had put into my heart to do for Jerusalem. What my God had put into my heart to do. God had put something deep into Nehemiah's heart. This is powerful language. The language of the heart is always powerful language. It's the language of love. Whenever the Bible mentions about the heart, it hardly ever, if ever actually, refers to our physical health and well-being. It doesn't refer to the heart in that way. But it refers to our heart as that which is the very center of our feeling, thought, and emotions. And the heart can often stand for love and for passion. The 50 Valentine cards they're going to drop through your letterbox on Tuesday. 40 of them will have a picture of a heart on them. The other ones will have teddy bears and things like that. But the heart is often standing as a symbol for love, for deep feeling, deep thought, and deep emotion. And Nehemiah says here in verse 12 that my God had put something in my heart. So right at the center of Nehemiah's thoughts, feelings, emotions, and love and passion was what God had put there. But we read in verse 12 that he hadn't told anyone about this, what it was. But we know, because we looked at it last week. Now, a week is a long time in church life. And some of you weren't here last week either. So let me remind you what it is, or what it was that God had put into Nehemiah's heart. Nehemiah had a very cushy number in many ways. He lived in Susa, which was one of the main cities of the Persian Empire. And there in Susa, he had a great job. He was a professional food and wine taster. He was the cupbearer to the king. That meant that he got to taste all the best food and all the best wine before he handed it on to the king. The downside, of course, was that he might get poisoned, as we said, but that would only happen once. So for all the rest of it, he had a great job. And being in the presence of the king, it made sure that he looked good, but he smelt good, so he'd have had all the best clothes and all the best lotions and potions and ointments and everything. And he would have had a room or an apartment either in the palace or around the palace. It was a great number. Someone's got to do it. And Nehemiah did this job. One day, though, when Nehemiah received a report from Jerusalem, from his brother and a few other people, that Jerusalem was in a right mess. The people there were in trouble and disgrace, and the walls of Jerusalem were broken down and its gates were burned with fire. Now, when Nehemiah heard this, he was devastated. He reacted in a very strange way. He sat down, he cried, he mourned, he fasted, and he prayed for some days, he tells us. That is a major reaction to a piece of bad news. Why that kind of reaction? Some might say it's an overreaction. Nehemiah, you've got issues. Have a tissue for your issue. You'll be fine. But Nehemiah had this deep in his heart. He'd heard what had happened, and that meant to him that God's name was in disgrace. Because for a city in those days to have its walls broken down and its gates burned with fire and its people in disgrace, it would have reflected badly on the king of that city. And the king of Jerusalem and the God of the people of Israel was Yahweh. So for that city to be broken down, for those people to be in disgrace, meant that Yahweh's reputation was tarnished. And that's why Nehemiah reacted like he did. He wept, he prayed, and he fasted, and he mourned. And as he waited upon God for a number of days, in fact, we'll find out it was a few months, as he waited upon God, these things sunk deep into his heart. And God put it deeper into his heart. And there came a point in his prayers and waiting upon God that Nehemiah knew that someone had to do about something about the situation in Jerusalem. Someone had to go there and repair the walls and restore the people. And Nehemiah had this deep impression from God that he was the man to do it. Now, Nehemiah wanted to do this. God had changed his heart. He put it into his heart. So with this passion burning within him, Nehemiah began to live for a cause greater than himself. Beforehand in the palace in Susa, he could have just lived for himself. But now he realizes something greater than himself. He wants to do this for God. But he couldn't just say to the king, "I'm off, I've got a better job." He couldn't do that. He actually had to get the king's permission. So with this burning in Nehemiah's heart, he needs to do something. He needs to ask the king for permission to go to Jerusalem. Now, would he be able to do that? Well, he prayed at the end of chapter 1 for success in the presence of the king. Now, deep in Nehemiah's heart was this passion for God's cause in Jerusalem. And when you've got something deep in your heart to do, then you become almost unstoppable. And there are three consequences that we'll see in chapter 2. Three consequences for Nehemiah having God's work deep in his heart. And the first consequence was this. It made Nehemiah very brave and bold before the most powerful man on earth. God's work in his heart actually made him bold and brave in the presence of the king of Persia. Let's look at this. Chapter 2, verses 1 to 3. In the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, when wine was brought for him, I took the wine and gave it to the king. I'd not been sad in his presence before. And so the king asked me, "Why does your face look so sad when you are not ill? This can be nothing but sadness of heart." I was very much afraid. But I said to the king, "May the king live forever. Why should my face not look sad when the city where my ancestors are buried lies in ruins and its gates have been destroyed by fire?" Let's see what's going on here. A date is given in verse 1, the month of Nisan. That's mid-March to mid-April. We saw in chapter 1 about the month of Kislev. That was 4 months earlier. So 4 months elapsed between chapter 1 and chapter 2. And for 4 months, Nehemiah was praying and mourning because of the state of the people of Israel and the city of Israel. 4 months worth of prayers were going into this. This was deep in his heart. And we read something about Nehemiah's feelings there in verse 2. He said, "I was very much afraid." I was very much afraid. Why? Well, because, verse 1, he'd not been sad in the presence of the king before. Why should it make him afraid that he was now sad in the presence of the king? Well, simply because the ancient kings of those times demanded that people not be sad in their presence. They wanted to be sheltered from bad news. No one dare tell them bad news. No one must make the king unhappy. Nobody must be sad in their presence. So for the king to notice Nehemiah was sad was a really dangerous thing for Nehemiah. Anything could happen, from losing his job to losing his life. So Nehemiah was sad in the presence of the king, sad because of the situation back in Jerusalem, and it shows on his face. And the king, being discerning, says, "I know you're not ill, so it's got to do with your heart." Of course, because this was deep in his heart. So that's what made him afraid in the presence of the king. How's the king going to react to how I'm feeling? Nevertheless, even with being afraid, he still shows courage. Verse 3. "But I said to the king," I was very much afraid, "but I said to the king, may the king live forever. Why should my face not look sad when the city where my ancestors are buried lies in ruins and its gates have been destroyed by fire?" So he doesn't beat a hasty exit. He doesn't put on a smile and pretend everything's fine. No, he acknowledges that he is sad. He's very wise and very flattering. He says to the king, "May the king live forever." In other words, "Oh, king, I hope you never die. So I want you to live forever, king." And then he tells the king exactly what his situation is. What's going on? He's showing courage and bravery in the face of his fear. Indeed, somebody has said that courage and bravery is not the absence of fear, but doing the right thing even though you are afraid. I repeat it. Courage and bravery is not the absence of fear, but doing the right thing even though you are afraid. That's courage. That's bravery. One of my favorite ever quotes, which I give to you about once a year, I make sure I give to you once a year, my little quote book. It's from the Last Battle, C.S. Lewis's book on the Tales of Narnia. And in it, you've got Jewel the Unicorn and Tyrion the King. And they're together, and they're in a very bad situation. They're surrounded by the enemies, and they're a little bit afraid. And the easiest thing would be for Jewel and Tyrion to flee, to run away. But Jewel the Unicorn says to the king, "Let's stay and take the adventure that Aslan sends us." That's courage. Let's stay and take the adventure Aslan sends us. And if God has put something into your heart, then it will enable you to push on through the fear and do what you have to do. So you're in a witnessing situation. You've got a chance to speak for Jesus. You get a little bit frightened, a little bit edgy. Your hands go clammy. Your heart beats fast. Your tongue dries up. But if it's deep in your heart, you'll say something. You'll stand for justice and truth in the workplace when the whole office or staff are doing something wrong. You might be afraid to stand up, being the only person to do so, but you'll do so if it's deep in your heart. You'll stay and take the adventure that God sends. And this is what Nehemiah was doing. He's very much afraid, but he shows this courage. And Nehemiah's courage has a surprising result. Verse 4. The king said to me, "What is it you want?" What a moment. This is one of the key moments in the whole book of Nehemiah. Indeed, in the whole rebuilding of Jerusalem. The king says to me, "What is it you want?" Now, what does Nehemiah do next? Well, he does two things. Verse 4. Then I prayed to the God of heaven. And verse 5. And I answered the king. I prayed to the God of heaven, and I answered the king. See, Nehemiah at this point knows that he's in the presence of two kings. The one king he can see, his name was Artaxerxes, he was the king of the Persian Empire. And Nehemiah could see him, and he knew that Artaxerxes represented the world power of the day. But Nehemiah also knew that he was in the presence of another king, one that you couldn't see, but one who's known as the God of heaven, who doesn't just rule the Persian Empire, but the whole wide world. And his kingdom never comes to an end. You read about the day of the Roman Empire, the day of the Greek Empire, the day of the Persian Empire, but you never read about the day of the kingdom of heaven. For it's eternal. It goes on and on forever. Never has a day. It's forever. And Nehemiah knows that the God of heaven is far greater than the king of Persia. So Nehemiah decides at this moment, when he's got this opportunity to ask this request to go to Jerusalem, he knows, first of all, he's got to pray. So he says, "Then I prayed to the God of heaven." You get the situation here. Nehemiah is in his workplace. He's on his front line. He cannot get down on his knees. He cannot close his eyes, put his hands together, and start saying a long prayer. He's in his workplace. But he can still pray. And this is an instant prayer sent up from his heart to the heart of God. Now, in days gone by, this kind of prayer that you just send up, this kind of prayer was called a telegraph prayer, days gone by. More recently, it's been called an arrow prayer, where you just shoot it up to God. And again, just lately, it's been called a text prayer. Off it goes. But I think today we should call it like a Snapchat prayer. You know, click, chum, off it goes. And someone receives it. So Nehemiah is praying this prayer, this instant. It's not out loud, but God hears it. He prays to the God of heaven. Do you know that if someone says to you that workplace is not a place to pray, say, well, Nehemiah then, he prayed in his workplace. You know, you can pray in your workplace. If Nehemiah did so in the presence of the king of Persia, then you can do so in the presence of your boss, your CEO, your MD, your line manager, or when you're in the head teacher's office, especially when you're in the head teacher's office, you pray. You can pray at any time. You can just send off that request to the God of heaven. Lord, I need help. Well, in your mind, in your heart, off it goes. And the next moment, after sending off this prayer to the God of heaven, verse 5, the very next moment, and I answered the king. See, he's still at work. He needs to concentrate and do a good job. He mustn't spill that wine or mess up that food. And Nehemiah seamlessly moves from one sphere to another, from talking to the God of heaven to talking to the king of Persia. And there are many lessons there about life on our front line. We pray and we do our job. And that's what Nehemiah does. He answers the king. What does he say to the king? Verse 5. If it pleases the king, and if your servant has found favor in his sight, then let him send me to the city in Judah where my ancestors are buried so that I can rebuild it. This is a major request. He is asking for time off work. And not just a few days. It would actually take him 2 months to get to Jerusalem. Then he's got to rebuild the wall and come back again. So this is a bold request in the presence of this king. Well, the king's got a few questions about it in verse 6. He says, how long will your journey take? And when will you get back? Nehemiah sets a time. We're not quite sure how long he told the king, but we know from the book of Nehemiah that it actually took him 12 years. That's a lot of time to have off work. But God seems to have moved the king's heart. And actually, what the king does is to agree to send Nehemiah. So, verse 8. May I have a letter to Asaph, keeper of the royal park, so he will give me timber to make beams of the gates of the citadel by the temple, and for the city wall, and for the residence I occupy. And because the gracious hand of my God was on me, the king granted my requests. So the king said, yeah, okay. And actually what the king did for Nehemiah was not to give him time off work, but to change his job. He gave him promotion. He made him the governor of Jerusalem. From the cupbearer to the king, to the governor of a whole city. And that's what Nehemiah became, the governor in Jerusalem for 12 years. Now, Nehemiah is emboldened to ask of the king these requests because it was in his heart. He had the courage to do so. He had the boldness to do so. Though he was afraid, yet he asked to go to Jerusalem, and he made a few other requests as well. We see in verses 7 and 8 that he asked the king for certain letters for a safe passage to Jerusalem. And then when he got to Jerusalem, for letters in order to get the equipment and the materials to build the wall. And the king granted his request. But note how Nehemiah puts it at the end of verse 8. The gracious hand of my God was on me. And because of that, the king answered my requests. God is able to use pagan and secular rulers, kings, presidents, and prime ministers to accomplish his purpose, even without them knowing it. And our God answers Nehemiah's prayer. He prayed for success, and God had given him success. And he was bold in the presence of the king because it was in his heart. Second thing we see here is this, that because God's cause was in Nehemiah's heart, it motivated him to get on with the task. It was real motivation. Every now and again, I decide to dip into the world of reading books on leadership and management and so on. And last year, I read this book called Drive. It's actually not one to read if you're taking your driving test, because it's not about that kind of driving, but the idea of drive as motivation. So what drives you? And here's what this guy, Daniel Pink, leadership guru, says. There are three basic drives, three basic motivations. There's the biological drive that we all have, and that's that makes us do things because of physical necessity, eat, drink, so on. And we've all got biological drive. And then he speaks about this extrinsic drive that people have. So we do things because of the promise of reward or the fear of punishment. So that's something from the outside. But he also speaks about an intrinsic drive, a kind of motivation that just comes from within. Something that you really want to do because it's in your heart. And therefore it drives you on to do it, and you actually really enjoy doing it because it's not out of a necessity, and it's not out of someone imposing something on you from the outside, but it's from your heart. And as you do that, you enjoy it. And this is the kind of motivation that Nehemiah had. It was something that was from within his heart. So it made him get on with the work. Look at chapter 2, verse 11. I went to Jerusalem, and after staying there for 3 days, I set out during the night with a few others. So I went to Jerusalem. It sounds very simple, but we know that that journey, as we said, takes 2 months. And it wouldn't have been an easy journey, a two-month journey. No wonder when he gets to Jerusalem, he takes 3 days of rest. He goes to Jerusalem. So he's motivated to take that major journey because it's in his heart. What's more, that mission that God had put in Nehemiah's heart made Nehemiah go on a secret mission, first of all. Before he ever tells the people there in Jerusalem what he's come to do and what he's going to do, there's a little bit of secrecy about it. And you read from verses 12 to 16 that Nehemiah didn't tell anyone what his God had put into his heart. So that's in verse 12. I had not told anyone about this. And he comes back to it in verse 16. The officials did not know where I had gone or what I was doing, because as yet I had said nothing to the Jews or the priests or anyone about this work. But what he does in that paragraph is to go out seemingly on his own, or maybe with another trusty person with him, but on his own it seems. And he makes this secret tour by night around Jerusalem's walls to see the state and the condition that it really was in. He'd heard a report, now he wants to see for himself. But he does it by night without anyone seeing him, and he doesn't tell anyone that he's doing it. Why? Well, we read about his enemies, Sanballat the Horonite, Tobiah the Ammonite official. And these guys would cause Nehemiah trouble throughout the whole book, as we'll find out in our series. But these people seem to be important people. It seems that Sanballat was an official in Samaria, and that Tobiah, well, he was an official, seemed to be based in Jerusalem. And Tobiah had friends amongst the Jews. One of the priests actually gave Tobiah a room in the temple. And it seems that Tobiah was privy to some of the high-level conversations that were going on in Jerusalem. And he would get that information as a kind of spy and pass it on to Sanballat. And then Sanballat, having a lot of muscle, because he's an official in Samaria, would make things hard for the Jews in Jerusalem. Now, Nehemiah knew all about this. So he decides he's not going to tell anyone. He doesn't want the information to get to these enemies before the work begins. So he goes on what could have been a dangerous mission at nighttime by himself. Why take the risk? Because God had put it in his heart. What's more, with this motivation coming from within, with this passion for God's cause burning in his heart, he then makes this really great rallying speech, verse 17. Then I said to them, "You see the trouble we are in? Jerusalem lies in ruins, and its gates have been burned with fire." So they knew that, but he calls a problem a problem. He tells them what's going wrong. So many people will not call a problem a problem. They'll ignore the problem, hoping it will go away. But problems don't go away. So Nehemiah actually says, okay, let's face up to the truth here. Look, we're in trouble. The walls are burned. The gates are burned. The walls are broken down. You see the problem. But then he suggests the solution, halfway through verse 17. Come, let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem, and we will no longer be in disgrace. Come on, let's get on with it. This is a great speech, like a captain at halftime when the team is 4-0 down or 3-0 down. Come on, let's get on with it. And Nehemiah also says in verse 18, God is with us. I also told them about the gracious hand of my God on me and what the king had said to me. So let's get on with it, because we're in trouble. We can do something about it, and God is with us. What a speech. It's a real leader. And how do they respond? Well, we see in verse 18, they replied, let us start rebuilding. So they began this good work. Nehemiah had inspired these people because the motivation was coming from within. It wasn't, oh, come on, we've got to do this in order to eat. We've got to do this. Someone's telling me to do this. He's saying, look, I want to do this, but I can't do it alone. Who's with me? And they respond, we're with you. They begin the good work and they rebuild the wall, and it takes 52 days. There's one more thing that we see here, because this mission was in Nehemiah's heart. We've seen that from within, it gave him bravery and courage even when he was afraid. We've seen that it motivated him in order to keep going in this work and get others to help him. Thirdly and finally, because this mission was in his heart, it enabled him to rise above opposition. Whenever you try to do something for God, there'll always be opposition. There are all kinds of unbelieving people around. Some will just leave you alone. Some will want to know more. Some will challenge you. Some will oppose you and try to bring you down. And we're in a spiritual warfare as well. So Satan and his forces are against us. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against the spiritual force, the dark forces of evil in the heavenly places. And the devil is an evil enemy who drives people on. And the devil raised up Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem. These were this unholy trinity that would be against Nehemiah and his workers. Verse 19, they're named and shamed. And we see the kind of opposition that they're giving to Nehemiah. At the end of verse 19, they're using their words to mock and to ridicule. What is this you're doing? Are you rebelling against the king? They're mocking him. What on earth are you doing, Nehemiah? You're so silly spending all your time and doing all that. That wall won't last. What are you doing? And the king, he won't like it. When the king hears about this, he'll come and he'll bring his army against you. He'll crush us all. So why don't you just stop it even before you start it? There's always opponents to God's work. Always enemies of God's people. Always people who will mock us and ridicule us for standing up for the truth. But if God's mission and cause and work is in your heart, you'll stand against that opposition. Oh, there may be times when we're knocked back, but then you'll come back again. And Nehemiah does in verse 20. I answered them by saying, he doesn't get into argument with them, but he answers them by saying, the God of heaven will give us success. God is in this. And if God is in this, we are more than conquerors. But as for you, you've no right or share or any claim to this. Nehemiah is able to overcome because this work is in his heart and he stands against opposition. Has God put something in your heart? I wonder what it is. Maybe that you want to be a missionary, an evangelist, a pastor, teacher, a church worker. Or it may be that God has put in your heart that you want to stand against the injustices of the corrupt, fallen world that we live in. You want to stand against the child abuse and the domestic violence and the people trafficking. You want to stand up for the vulnerable. You want to help the addicted, the homeless, or the poor. Maybe you're passionate about one of these causes that God has put in your heart. Or maybe it is that there's something right now at your school or your workplace or your uni that you're thinking, that's not right, and I've got to do something about it. It's in your heart. Are you living for a cause greater than yourself? And is that cause in your heart? John Piper, in a book called Don't Waste Your Life, he writes this: desire that your life count for something great. Long for your life to have eternal significance. Want this. Don't coast through life without a passion. Nehemiah was not a man who coasted through life. This was in his heart, and it enabled him to get the job done. And Nehemiah's our great example. But you know, there was one greater than Nehemiah who also suffered opposition, one called Jesus. Verse 20, or rather verse 19, the enemies were saying to Nehemiah, "What is this you are doing? Are you rebelling against the king?" Very similar words were said to Jesus on the cross. They mocked him. "Come down from the cross. Are you rebelling against Rome and Caesar?" Very similar words. But what kept Jesus on the cross? We've often said it wasn't the nails. What kept him on the cross was his love, which was roaring in his heart for me and for you. Now, our Savior is able to overcome opposition, was able to get the job done and to withstand those who were against him. He was able to do that because God's cause was in his heart. Jesus is much more than an example to us. He's a Savior to us, but he is also an example to us. And what has he put in your heart to do for him? The book of Nehemiah will teach us, as we saw last week and this week and again, that we must live for a cause greater than ourselves. And we will if it's put into our heart. Soften my heart, Lord, from all indifference. Set me apart to feel your compassion, to weep with your tears. Soften my heart, Lord. Soften my heart. Let's be quiet before the Lord.